WCCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk on VCY America. We're going to be hitting the issue of vaccinations today. Even before COVID-19 broke, many bills have been drafted across this nation to mandate vaccinations. Efforts to remove exemptions such as religious exemptions, personal conscience exemptions, even medical exemptions intensified. And now with the outbreak of COVID-19, there's been a lot of discussion of mandatory vaccinations, vaccination passports, even talk of putting in quarantine those who resist vaccinations, or even those perpetrating the idea that the state has a legal constitutional right to stick your arm and inject a vaccination into you. What about a mandated COVID vaccination? What about the tracing of individuals somehow linked to COVID? And why are some vaccine manufacturers insistent on using aborted baby cell lines to develop a COVID vaccination? Well, joining us today, we welcome back Barbara Lowe Fisher. She's president of the National Vaccine Information Center. They're a nonprofit charity that she co-founded with parents of DPT vaccine injured children in 1982. So for some 38 years, she's led a national grassroots movement and public information campaign to institute vaccine safety reforms and inform consent protections in the public health system. She has researched, she has analyzed, she's publicly articulated the major issues involving the science, policy, law, ethics, and politics of vaccinations to become one of the world's leading non-medical consumer advocacy experts on the subject. She's co-author of DPT, A Shot in the Dark, and author of The Consumer's Guide to Childhood Vaccines, Vaccines, Autism, and Chronic Inflammation, The New Epidemic, and Reforming Vaccine Policy and Law, A Guide. Barbara, welcome back here to Crosstalk.
Oh, well, thank you for having me back. There's so much going on. It's almost impossible to talk about all of it.
Indeed. And you've not been with us since the COVID-19 matter started here in the U.S., but you have been warning, actually, for years of the attempts to remove exemptions to vaccinations, and again, warning for years of national plans to vaccinate every American, and we'll get into some of the aspects of COVID, but share us with us your general concern there.
Well, there's no question that I think what's happened is after 40 years of seeding the consciousness of people in this country with information about the fact that these vaccines are not, don't have very high standards for proof of safety and effectiveness pre-licensure, that you have a public private business partnership now with the government, these federal agencies, and the pharmaceutical industry. You have the courts that have basically let us down big time, on U.S. Supreme Court in particular, in terms of protecting these manufacturers from liability in civil courts. All of this messaging has started to resonate with people in this country as this COVID-19 pandemic was declared, and immediately, I mean almost immediately, the message was that the only way that we can go back to normal, or a semblance of normal, the new normal as they call it, is to have a vaccine that everybody will have to take. Literally, every single person in the world will have to take. And of course, the leading proponents of this are such officials as Anthony Fauci, head of the National Institutes of NIH, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, which is an institute in the NIH, Bill Gates, who is a businessman turned philanthropist, who has deep ties financially to the pharmaceutical industry, and has declared that the world must be vaccinated, and particularly must be vaccinated with a COVID-19 vaccine. These vaccines are being fast-tracked to licensure. They are cutting corners in ways that have never been cut before. They are skipping animal trials, many of these companies going straight into experimentation on humans with vaccines using technology that has never been licensed before for vaccines used by humans. DNA and messenger RNA technology, nanoparticles technology, these are truly vaccines that are being rushed to market using technology that we simply don't know enough about. And the projection is that these new COVID-19 vaccines, I think there's over 100 vaccines now being created for COVID-19, that they will be mandated. And everyone will have to take them.
And we're finding, as you mentioned, I mean, some of the governors are opening up their states or communities in different stages. And some have said we're never going to get to that end, that final stage of opening completely back up until that vaccination is there, until a vaccine is available for all to have. And we know that there's a great push for this. It was an article I was reading from LifeSiteNews.com, a committee of the New York State Bar Association that's wanting their association to demand all U.S. residents be injected with the coronavirus vaccine.
Right. And as I said, there is still an argument about the origin of COVID-19, this novel coronavirus that suddenly cropped up in China. There's a lot of arguments that are going on between scientists who say, oh, you know, it sprang from an animal in a live food market in Wuhan, China, back in the winter of 2019. And yet others are saying, no, it looks as if it was a genetically engineered, an engineered virus that escaped out of a biohazard lab where they were developing, bioterrorism weapons, et cetera. So we really don't still know really a lot about this novel coronavirus. And yet they're trying to make a vaccine for it. Unless you truly understand the virus and understand the different mechanisms, how it behaves in the human body, it is extremely difficult to make a vaccine that's both safe and effective.
Now, I also want to point out that through the years, there's been some pretty lucrative public-private business partnerships with the pharmaceutical industry and the medical establishment. What's been occurring there?
Yeah, it really has been in the 21st century. I'd say since 2001, when they passed a series of pieces of legislation after 9/11, that officially the government or the Congress told the agencies, the federal agencies, to develop these public-private business partnerships with the pharmaceutical industry at that point to develop vaccines against bioterrorism, weapons of mass destruction, as they called it back then, and at the same time gave liability protection to all the companies who would be developing these bioterrorism vaccines and vaccines that would be used whenever a pandemic is declared, a public health emergency for a pandemic, like an influenza pandemic. This happens to be a coronavirus pandemic. Coronavirus is very similar to influenza virus. It's transmitted the same way as influenza. So you have both this rush, all this money, I mean, billions of dollars have been committed to creating these vaccines, and in this case, even more billions have been given to the pharmaceutical industry to use this taxpayer money to create these vaccines that they will be marketing, they will be selling.
Now, while this is
government.
Yeah, while this is going on, I also want to bring another very relevant tangent into our discussion, Barbara, and this is the nationwide electronic health records and vaccine tracking system. So let's bring that into our discussion here.
Right. That's been actually being built, the electronic surveillance system, the electronic medical record system has really been built over the last 25, 30 years, excuse me, and that's where they want to take all of the electronic medical records and integrate them with vaccine tracking systems that have been, I think they started around in the early 1990s, and so what you will have is your electronic medical record will also contain all of your vaccination history, including vaccines that you've refused. So your history is there along with the rest of the medical records. And what they're talking about, and Bill Gates is a big champion of this, is actually trying to have some sort of a way that your records will be read on your body. That is, with like a tattoo type thing where they give you a vaccine with microneedles and then you have this like tattoo that can be read with a smartphone to show that you've gotten a certain vaccine, like a COVID-19 vaccine. So they are moving with this technology to try to make sure that everybody in the world has all the vaccines that the governments say they must have. And again, the governments have developed these public-private business partnerships with the pharmaceutical industry. So if you have a business partner, if the pharma industry is your business partner, you're going to be doing everything you can to make sure that that industry is a profitable one. And that means that we all have to buy and use these vaccines.
Now, Barbara, in the short time you've been with us, you have mentioned the name of Bill Gates twice. And long before COVID-19, he's been on a crusade for mandatory vaccinations, including putting a whole lot of money into this process. But what's interesting is that as he has been on this crusade for mandatory vaccinations, he's also been on a crusade for population control and reducing the population. How do these two things fit together?
Well, you know, for a long time, he has made statements that to the effect that if you vaccinate every child in the world with multiple vaccines, you'll have fewer children dying from these diseases, which will mean that mothers will not have to have more children to replace the ones who have died. That was what he originally talked about. Now, a lot of people said what he's really after is vaccines that will control fertility. Certainly, probably one of the most famous examples is the lacing of neonatal tetanus vaccines given to women in the third world who give birth often in unsanitary conditions, and their children develop tetanus, that these neonatal tetanus vaccines were laced with human chorionic gonadotropin, HCG, which is a natural, it causes you to abort your baby.
Wow.
So there is that record. Now, of course, the authorities and the companies deny that they did that, but I know that the Catholic Church had put in a number of people in place to test these vaccines and had found that they were laced with HCG. So it's a big controversy and people denying, you know, that it ever took place. But then there's evidence it did take place.
Yeah.
So whether or not there is something where, you know, these vaccines that are mandated can be somehow manipulated to impair fertility, I mean, that's, you know, we're going to have to, if it's true, the evidence has to be brought forward. But the only way you can really do that is to be able to sue companies in court. And as of 2011, the U.S. Supreme Court declared vaccines to be unavoidably unsafe, licensed vaccines by the FDA to be unavoidably unsafe, and therefore that the manufacturers should not be held liable because these vaccines, after all, are mandated by government. They're not only recommended by the federal government, but in the U.S. they are mandated by state governments. Therefore, the company shouldn't be liable. So I think that what people need to understand is when you line up, if you choose to get this COVID-19 vaccine, or indeed give your children any of the recommended and mandated vaccines, there's no way for you to hold a company liable in the civil court of law. If your child is injured or killed, there is no way to hold anyone who gives the vaccine to your child or who votes to mandate the vaccine. There's just no liability for anyone. Basically, you're left with the damage.
We got to take a break here. Barbara Lowe Fisher, our guest, and folks, stay with us. We'll be right back.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, creation seminar speaker at the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, how many different types of animals did Noah take on board the ark?
Chris, detractors from the biblical flood story say that there were way too many animals to have fit on board the ark. But not so. Let's look carefully. First off, we need to recognize that most animals live in the ocean and would not have to be on board the ark. They would survive, at least in representative numbers, outside the ark. By the way, Noah didn't even have to take two of every species. The Bible says two of every kind, probably a broader category which might include a number of species, like the dog kind. Altogether, I suspect that there were probably less than 20,000 animals on board the ark. This was difficult for Noah, but not impossible. At least that's the way I see it from a Back to Genesis perspective.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
Barbara Lowe Fisher, our guest here today on Crosstalk. She's president of the National Vaccine Information Center. And today we're dealing with this issue. Are mandatory vaccinations coming? There's a lot of development that's going underway, a lot of things that are being fast-tracked at this point. And Barbara, just as we were going into this the break, you had mentioned about there's no recourse for parents whose children are injured in obtaining vaccines, or if they themselves are getting vaccinated. Isn't there something like a victim's compensation fund?
Well, there is, but it's called under the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986. Any vaccine that is recommended by the government for use by children. And many of these vaccines that are recommended for use by children are also recommended for adults. Anybody who is injured should be able to access what was supposed to be a less adversarial, no-fault, fair, expedited administrative system of compensation, so that you didn't have to go into a court of law and sue, which is a very expensive, very lengthy proposition. But unfortunately, after that law was passed in 1986, the federal health agencies and the Department of Justice went in and systematically gutted the bill. Congress looked the other way, and unfortunately, the Supreme Court sort of put the final nail in the coffin in 2011 by completely removing all existing liability from the companies. There still was liability for the companies for design defect until 2011. So you have, at this point, no recourse in the civil court system if you are injured or die from a vaccine, and that's just the way it is.
We have previously brought up on this program a House bill. It's H.R. 6666, the COVID-19 Testing, Reaching and Contacting Everyone Act. It's known as the TRACE Act. But this legislation, though it may have some success in the House, uncertainty in the Senate, but this is legislation that's really ringing alarm bells in the ears of many concerned people. If you would comment on this.
Yes, and that's a federal bill that was introduced at the beginning of May. It has about 59 sponsors, mostly from one political party. And this would give funding, I think, $100 billion of taxpayer money, federal taxpayer money, to create this contact tracing program where hundreds of thousands, or at least tens of thousands, I think they're looking at 300,000 people would be hired to go fan out across America, and they can actually even come into your home and test you for COVID-19, whether or not you have it. And then they would be able to detain you either in your home or in a mobile unit if they don't think your home is an appropriate place to quarantine you. And then they would trace all of your contacts. And then if your contacts personal contacts test positive, they would also be subjected to quarantine. And this is a very dangerous type of legislation. It hasn't yet gone anywhere, but it has been continued to get co-sponsors. So we don't know where it's going to go. Excuse me. And the problem is this is a violation of a number of different amendments of the U.S. Constitution. You have a right to be safe in your home. You have a right to not have the government come in and you know, take you out of your home and say you have to be quarantined somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, along with this, though, I mean, we are seeing, the propaganda machine just really going at this time. I mean, we have those that are saying, well, this contact tracing, this is really being done in the public good. Yes, we have to balance this with rights of privacy and confidentiality. Yet we see these rights that are being breached. I mean, in some locations, people who refuse to quarantine have been outfitted with ankle bracelets. I mean, just like those with criminals that have to wear them who are confined to a house arrest.
Right. I mean, this is a violation of First Amendment rights of a number of different rights. Excuse me, I have a tickle in my throat. I think that, you know, people need to be aware that they've got to elect people to their state legislature and to the governor's position that are going to protect their civil rights.
Well, Well, folks, keep in mind, we are not too far from the elections this November as well, and a lot of determination is going to be made in your state government as far as the makeup of your legislature and governors, and, of course, the full U.S. Congress up for election, one-third of the U.S. Senate as well. On this matter of tracing and so forth, Barbara, I understand that in a number of states, people who their test for COVID-19, that information is being shared even with law enforcement.
Oh, yes. Your electronic health medical records, HIPAA, back in 1996, it was supposed to protect the privacy of your medical records, was really a joke because there were so many exemptions as to who could gain access to your medical records. And first and foremost are government health officials, government law enforcement officials, child protective services. There are a number of exemptions in HIPAA. And so while, I don't know if you've ever experienced it, you can't have a relative,
yes,
something get, or a husband or wife,
right,
get access to your medical records, and yet your medical records are open to a lot of different people, including outside corporations who are, and researchers who are doing research. I mean, it's kind of a joke.
The number of people who had this update happen on their phones, their Apple iOS updates, 13.5 update, I understand there's some concern on what that included.
Well, I know. Some people are saying you can turn it off, and some people are saying once you update your phone, you're not able to turn it off. And certainly if you buy a new phone, it's embedded into the phone. I still haven't gotten clarity on whether or not you can turn it off. I would suggest anybody who has a phone, to go into your settings and see if you can turn it off.
This is a tracking mechanism of some sort, or?
Yes. This is something that they want to work with government to try to help government do this tracing.
Wow. I understand, too, there's also talk about vaccination passports, something that's already at least been under review in the European Union.
Yes, the European Union is talking about it. Bill Gates, again, is involved in promoting this idea that if you don't show that you have antibodies to COVID-19 through an antibody test, you basically have to be vaccinated or you have to show proof of this antibody before you can function in society. And I think that they call it the immunity passport. And, whether or not that's going to happen, I don't know, because there's this continuing argument between the World Health Organization scientists and, for example, scientists at Harvard and other universities about whether or not when you recover from COVID-19, whether you have immunity or whether antibodies, the level of antibodies you have, really predicts whether or not you're immune or whether or not it really is cell-mediated immunity, which can't be measured through antibodies, are what is really important. Again, so much not known, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think what's going to happen is they're just going to say, look, we don't know, so everybody has to be vaccinated. That will be your immunity passport.
Wow.
And what the problem with that is they have so narrowed the medical exemption so that almost no medical condition qualifies as a reason not to vaccinate. You're going to have a whole subset of people who have chronic health care conditions, who have severe allergies, who have autoimmunity, who may be at very increased risk for having a very strong inflammatory response to this COVID-19 vaccine and not being able to resolve the inflammation and becoming even sicker than they already are. And that is something I've been concerned about throughout my career, trying to warn about the risk factors for vaccination, but particularly with this COVID-19 vaccine, which there are going to be so many unknowns, and it truly will be a shot in the dark.
Barbara, there's a number of manufacturers that are just rushing to develop a vaccination right now, and from a number of different sources, a number of different research and development labs, et cetera. But there are a number of them that are committed to using the cell lines from aborted babies. Would you just make a comment on that? It's troubling to many.
Yes. Well, there are several vaccines. The very first one that used aborted fetal cells for production was rubella vaccine, which is in the measles, mumps, and rubella shot, three vaccines in one shot. Since then, the companies have liked to use aborted fetal cell lines because they get a higher yield. The vaccine grows very well and in these lines. And, of course, there are many people who are opposed to injecting into their bodies anything that has to do with an aborted fetus. And I know Johnson & Johnson, I was just checking some of the ingredients or the way they're making it, and Johnson & Johnson, which has been awarded $1 billion by BARDA, which is under the Department of Health and Human Services, is going to be using a cell line derived by transformation of embryonic retinal epithelial cells with, and they're going to combine it with human adenovirus type 5 and to produce this vaccine. That's just one vaccine that's on a fast track. You've got Moderna that is partnering with the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. That's Dr. Fauci's institute that he heads up. That is being tested on adults in phase 1 clinical trials, and that's been funded by Gates as well. And that's a messenger RNA vaccine, which, again, this is a vaccine, the type of technology that's never been used in humans. And you've got Pfizer, you've got GlaxoSmithKline, all the big companies are making these COVID-19 vaccines, and a lot of smaller new companies as well.
And to a vaccine, there have been some, you know, just in their mind thinking, oh, I'll go in, I'll get this vaccination, I'm done. One and done, and it's over with. But there's indication that they might have to be given a multiplicity of times. Is that correct?
Right. I mean, what's come out in the last few weeks is that most companies are saying there'll have to be at least two doses given. And Dr. Fauci has said in the this past week that it will probably be an annual vaccine, which means not only are they fast-tracking this to market, cutting corners on proof of safety and effectiveness in a rush to try to get this vaccine out and licensed by the end of this year or certainly the early part of next year, but you're going to have to take it multiple times. And each time you take it, there's a risk.
My. I want to digress here just a moment as well on the vaccination issue, but for another issue that you've written about on your website, and that is the wearing of masks, the dangers of wearing masks, especially in heat and humidity. Could you just briefly comment on that?
Yeah, you know, we actually, it was interesting that just before I got on with this show, there was somebody on our staff whose mother is in the hospital because she had to wear a mask constantly for her job, and she now is in the hospital because she has a condition caused by the constant wearing of the mask. It's a lung condition, and she's having to be treated in a hospital.
Wow.
There have been warnings that particularly people with COPD or other breathing issues have to be very careful about constant mask wearing. I've read about children who have passed out in the heat from wearing masks. And in Virginia, for example, the governor has said you have to wear a mask 24/7, whether you're inside with other people or you're outside. So there are some states that are absolutely saying you have to or you will be fined or jailed.
Wow. We're going to take a quick break. I've got a couple more questions. And folks, be ready to jot down a couple websites. We'll be giving you a point of contact for our guest here today because they've got vital information on their websites you need to know about. And we'll be sharing that with you. This is Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Are you aware of past crises when America's fate hung desperately in the balance? From the French and Indian War, the Revolution, the Civil War, and other national events, leaders in our country called the nation to prayer. In the book, Miracles in American History, author Susie Federer, the wife of historian and researcher Bill Federer, recounts 32 amazing stories of answered prayer from American history. You'll read about events such as the winter at Valley Forge, the Boston Tea Party, dense fog that appeared, allowing 8,000 troops to escape, the Star-Spangled Banner, and other events where prayer had an impact. You'll also learn when Apollo 13 was lost in space, what happened after the president called the nation to prayer. It's a reminder as to how badly prayer is needed for our nation today. Copies of Miracles in American History are available for a donation of $18 to VCY America by calling 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
Barbara Lowe Fisher is our guest here today on Crosstalk. She's the president of the National Vaccine Information Center. And folks, as she said, this COVID-19 vaccination, it's on a fast track and a lot of corners that are being cut right now. Barbara, your website has just exploded over the past few months with pieces of legislation that have cropped up in states all across the country as it relates to vaccinations. Comment on that as well as then give us, the website information where our listeners can stay engaged and know what's going on in their own state.
Right. Well, our flagship website is one of the oldest websites on the internet is NVIC.org for National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC.org. We also have a website that's called the NVIC Advocacy Portal at NVICAdvocacy.org, which is what you're talking about. That's where we monitor legislation that is being proposed in different states or at the federal level. And we let people know about that legislation. And if you're signed up for our advocacy portal, then you get into your email box when legislation is moving in your state. So it's personalized. You don't get everybody else's information, just information about your state. And that's where you can, and we give you talking points to call. You also put in touch with your electronically with your own legislators, so you can email or you can fax or you can call your legislator and make your voice heard. And this is very important, as I said at the outset of the show. The people we elect in this country to represent us at the state and federal level are the ones who make the laws that govern us. They're also the ones who appoint federal judges and state judges. Everything comes down to who we elect.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't elect good people that reflect our values and beliefs, we're going to get bad law, and we're going to be under the yoke of that bad law. So you need to get out and get to know all of your elected officials. I'm talking from the city council on up to your state legislators and your federal representatives. This coming election is going to be important. If you don't like the way your governor handled the lockdown response in your state, or you don't like the way your state legislatures are passing laws that are going to force you to use vaccines, you need to replace those people. That's the only way you're going to be free.
Let me give these websites again. Again, for general information, NVIC.org. That stands for National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC.org. And then their portal to keep you informed on what's going on within your state is NVICAdvocacy.org, NVICAdvocacy.org.
Right.
Barbara, I'd like you to address the matter of fear. I mean, there have been great efforts underway to instill fear in the population. How great an impact is fear having on this nation as people are gaining more freedom now? Now they're being told, watch out, there's another outbreak that's coming. Comment on this topic of fear.
You know, I don't think any of us could have predicted that this country would have willingly gone into self-quarantine, would have willingly allowed 30% of our population to be out of work, businesses to be shuttered and bankrupt. We have food lines now in this country, people who can't buy food because they don't have enough money because they have no jobs. Who would have ever predicted that we voluntarily would have allowed this to happen? Why do we allow the near bankrupting of our economy? It's because we were persuaded by fear. Fear of a virus. Fear of a virus that now it looks at is only, in terms of mortality, is about 0.25%. We're not talking about smallpox that had a 30% mortality. We're not talking about diphtheria with a 5 to 10% mortality, or the 1918 pandemic flu, which had a 2.5% mortality. We're talking about less than 1%. And yet we've allowed ourselves, because of fear and because we aren't paying attention to really looking at what is this virus, what should the response be? It could have been a much more moderated response. I do think part of the reason that we went into lockdown was because we have had this business partnership with pharmaceutical industry and the federal agencies and our politicians, and they decided that they were going to have this response so that we would be conditioned to thinking that the only way we can get out of the situation is to take this vaccine.
Yeah. Well, you know, and at the same time, we've got the groups like the World Health Organization saying that, you know, amidst all these new freedoms now, that the coronavirus crisis is worsening, and we need to have greater active surveillance taking place and get ready for the second wave. I mean, we're told that, and there are some in public positions who are saying we may have to clamp down again and reclose things down a second time.
Well, it doesn't make any rational sense. If you take a step back, we need to engage in rational thinking. And fear does not allow us to engage in rational thinking. We allow our emotions to override our rational thinking process. And this is, if you look at, and I think history will show, when an analysis is done, the price that's been paid for immediately going into lockdown without using traditional public health measures, which there are traditional ones. For example, you don't mix the sick with the healthy like they did in these nursing homes where people were, I mean, that's where the majority of the deaths have occurred. They mixed the healthy people with the sick people. In New York is infamous,
yes,
what happened in New York.
Right.
They could have, you know, you quarantine the sick until they're well. You don't quarantine everybody. You find out what the virus is and how it's acting. But what we've done is we've basically brought our whole economy to a stop. And many people whose lives have been ruined, their careers have been ruined, they'll never get them back. And so, you know, again, it's about a measured response, a balanced response, rather than a hysterical, fear-based response. But I do think our civil liberties are in danger. We're being conditioned to say that for an illusion of safety, we have to give up liberty. The long-term consequences of that, the profound long-term consequences of saying for a little bit of safety or an illusion of safety we have to give up liberty are incalculable. So I'm a big civil liberties advocate, mm-hmm. and I'm a champion of human rights, and I think that we really need to understand what we're giving up here.
Barbara Lowe Fisher, our guest. Our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. We don't have time for long speeches. If you have a question you'd like to ask or a brief comment, our phone number, 800-733-9829. Robert, do you believe a majority of the U.S. population would willingly just hold out their arm for this whatever coronavirus vaccine is developed?
Well, interestingly, there have been a number of polls that have been done in the last month, and they show that in America, about half of the people, about 45% of people, either will not take it or have doubts that they will take the vaccine. That means that when this vaccine is rolled out to the public in 2021, there's going to be a choice that Americans are going to have to make. And that is, are they going to stand up for their right to informed consent, voluntary informed consent to vaccine risk-taking, or are they going to submit and give up their right to protection of bodily integrity and autonomy? Again, those who want to take the vaccine are free to take it, but we shouldn't be forced to take it.
Let's go to Gerald in Ashtabula, Ohio. You're on the air, Gerald.
Thank you for taking my call. It's going all the way back to one world religious, one world government. It's all connected.
Okay.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I didn't always believe that, but I'm starting to understand that what's happening right now is definitely a reordering of the world order.
Yeah, indeed.
For sure.
Yeah, and we have different ones calling for that to take place. Amazing. Andrew is calling from Hattiesburg, Mississippi. You're on the air, Andrew.
Hey, good afternoon. You know, your guest mentioned a few minutes ago about how these people are using fear to get a whole population to react, and, you know, and how people who control the money are recommending vaccines and calling the shots. And it made me think of a prophecy or a statement over in the New Testament that talked about how their greed knew no bounds.
Hmm. Yeah, greed knows no bounds. Thank you for that. And
indeed,
there's big money in here. I mean, look at the attack that we had on, was it hydroxychloroquine?
A drug
that is very cheaply manufactured and how that was pounced upon?
Yes. I mean, again, whenever something came up that looked as if it could help people get through the coronavirus infection without the need for a vaccine, it has been attacked.
Yeah.
And so you have to keep the people in fear in order to have that fear is that bridge between where we are now and when the vaccine comes out. And so you'll see the messaging now. There were all the protests that have occurred, and people showed up in thousands of, you know, people. Some were masked, some were not masked. Now that has calmed down, they're back to the messaging. The PR machines that are working for pharmaceutical companies and the government are back to messaging that, oh, we're going to have a second wave. The U.S. leads the world, they say, in new coronavirus cases. That's because the rest of the world isn't doing the testing we're doing, number one, and the reporting. But again, you know, we are the richest country in the world. We buy more vaccines and drugs than any other country in the world. And we will be paying for these vaccines to be delivered to the rest of the world that can't afford them. So they have to keep this population fearful and ready to purchase and use these vaccines.
Kip is calling from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. You're on the air.
Oh, thanks, Jim, for taking my call. I just have a quick question for your guest, Barbara. a friend of mine or a co-worker told me one time that this had to do with the flu shot, but she said that her mother had told her that if you were to take a lemon or a lime or something, and right after that shot, if you put that on there, that would draw that out. I don't know if that's true or not, or if there's anything else that you can do that would draw that out right away if you took the shot. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you very much, and God bless you.
Thank you. No, I have not actually heard of that. But, you know, there are a lot of old-fashioned remedies that are out there, and certainly the holistic health profession has talked about ways to help prevent you from being vulnerable to COVID-19 or indeed to any infection, and that is keeping your levels of vitamin D very high, making sure that you have proper vitamin levels, not just with D, but with other vitamins and minerals, eating well, exercising. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you can help prevent getting sick, whether it's from COVID-19 or other infections, but I had not heard of that particular remedy for after you get vaccinated. Mm-hmm. I have not heard of that.
I'm going to try and squeeze Sue in here before the break. Sue in Oshkosh, you're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon. Do you know where the President of the United States stands regarding a mandatory coronavirus vaccine?
Mm-hmm.
I heard someone say that he is already readying or mobilizing the U.S. military to help administer the vaccine, and I was wondering if there was any validity to that statement.
Great. Okay, we're going to take that question and give you an answer right after the break because the music has started up here, and so stay tuned. We'll have an answer on that here in just a minute. Barbara Lowe Fisher is our guest here on Crosstalk. By the way, her website's nvic.org and nvicadvocacy.org. Back in a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. There's a 45-page manual out there called Burn Down the American Plantation. It is nothing less than anarchy and communism mixed together. It is calling for the end of the state, the end of police, the end of prisons. It is calling for revolutionary justice. It is calling for attacking conservatives and constitutionalists because we are involved in so-called slavery. It says they must abolish the slavery system, and by that they mean the free market system, and they see our laws and our constitutional republic as an extension of slavery. They even state that the folks in the suburbs, the middle class, are extension of the police because they sit on juries, they're snitches, and sometimes they're deputized, and they support the police. Therefore, this is why you're going to see them move into the suburbs and try to burn down the suburbs, well, because you're part of extension of the police. Look out, America is involved in a communist revolution attempt.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Friends, have you thought about sharing the information you learned from this program with others? You can do that within just a couple hours. We'll have a link up on our site, and you can download it. You can send the link to others, crosstalkamerica.com, crosstalkamerica.com. Hard copy CDs are also available for donation of $6. You can call our switchboard at 1-800-729-9829. Barbara, the call right before the break was the Trump administration and vaccine mandate. Your response?
I've only seen the administration trying to accelerate the development of vaccines so that those who want to use a COVID-19 vaccine have it available as soon as possible. I have not seen the administration say they are behind everyone being forced to take it. Now, I've seen public health officials and scientists and others say that everyone should be required to take it, but I have not seen the administration say that, only making it available.
Just a couple stories coming on the web. LifeSiteNews.com, Trump says coronavirus vaccine will be voluntary. Not everyone is going to want to get it. You also asked about the military. RT.com reporting here that define distribute Trump mobilizing military to deliver COVID-19 vaccine, assuming we get it. So they use the military to deliver it out there. But there's a lot of unanswered questions there. But we understand through him at this point anyways that he would not see this as being a mandatory item. But he's only in office right now, Barbara, here till the end of this term. And then it's up in the air how voters will make their decisions.
Yes, that's right. And I would urge everyone to vet the candidates that they're going to vote for and find out what their position is on vaccination and whether or not they support flexible medical, religious, and conscious exemptions in vaccine laws. If they don't, or if they are associated with others who are, you know, taking these exemptions away, you need to think hard about who you're voting for.
Linda's calling from Cookeville, Tennessee. You're on the air, Linda.
Yes. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, on the COVID-19, the situation that happened early on in Italy, I believe it was more in the northern part of Italy, could she give us an explanation of that situation, because they had such a high number of deaths, you know, just quickly among their people. And I was just wondering about an explanation given.
Right. Italy has one of the highest proportions of elderly citizens of countries in Europe. They also have a lot of pollution, in the air pollution in the area where a lot of those deaths occurred. And there has been a positive finding of increased levels of air pollution and people who have trouble with COVID-19. That certainly is true for China. China has one of the worst air pollution problems in the world. And so we know that COVID-19 is at higher risk if you're elderly, if you're over 65. You are at much higher risk if you have a coinciding chronic illness like diabetes, hypertension, cardiac, or lung disease. These are traditionally chronic diseases that put you at risk for basically any infection, because you can get pneumonia and die.
Hmm.
So it's really important to understand what the high-risk factors are. That is, being over 65 and having a coinciding chronic illness. And that certainly is what they found in Italy. Those two categories were at higher risk for dying.
Thank you, Linda. Let's go to West Allis, Wisconsin. Brad, you're on the air.
Hi, Brother Jim. I just want everybody to stop and think. The experts with the big mouths and a lot of words telling us what's going on with this virus from the beginning until now have been wrong. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean a little bit. They've been galactically wrong time and time again. Now, when they try to scare us like they're starting to do with this, oh, we're going to have another wave thing, why would we trust them that they've all of a sudden gotten intelligent and are all of a sudden going to be right?
Hmm.
I'm not going to.
Thank you, Brad. Barbara.
Thank you.
I think in this country we have bowed down too long. The experts who have MD or PhD written after their names, anybody who has a medical initial after their name, somehow magically is so wise that they should never be questioned. They are only human. Science is not perfect. Doctors are not infallible. And these, quote, experts have some of them have a lot of conflicts of interest as to why they're saying what they're saying. And I just say that as someone who's been here for almost 40 mm-hmm. years, watching the public health empire get more and more powerful, be funded with more and more taxpayer money. And I think we need to understand these folks are just like us. They just decided to go to medical school or decided to be a nurse or whatever. It doesn't mean that they're any smarter than we are. It doesn't mean that they should be our masters. We hire them basically to give us medical advice, which we should be able to accept or reject. I mean, where in the world do we think that we have to put these people on pedestal and they tell us what to do and we can't say anything? We can't make a decision?
And Barbara, I'm sure you'd agree that there are many in the profession with the degree behind their name are very, very good in their profession in that regard as well.
There are. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Just like in any other profession. But why is the medical profession and the scientific profession put on a pedestal where these experts are not to be questioned? And in fact, if you question them, you are to be censored. You are to be, I mean, this is happening to any of us who dissent and say that there should be higher licensing standards for proof of safety and effectiveness of vaccines, that there should be liability for these companies and for people who negligently give drugs and vaccines, that there should be accountability somewhere.
We're censored and thrown off of social media, we're branded,
demonized, and marginalized.
30 seconds, James, you have a quick question, Pennsylvania.
Well, there's so much I'd like to say, but I really appreciate the work of Ms. Fisher and Jim, what you're doing with the show. But with doctors, I mean, I think they're just not only, I mean, people look to them like gods. You know, they're propped up in society, and basically they're just pushing big pharma drugs. It's not about health, wellness, your immune function, you know, eating a healthy diet.
Tell you what, we're going to have to leave it there, James. I apologize for it. We are plain out of time. Barbara Lowe Fisher, our guest, NVIC.org, NVICAdvocacy.org. Barbara, thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much.
And folks, check out their websites, download the information, stay informed on what's going on in your state. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.